Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Traina, and it is Monday, September 16th. It is the day after the Giants lost yet another game, this time a 28-14 decision to the Buffalo Bills. I feel like we're on a rinse and repeat cycle with this team as far as, you know, some of the issues that have popped up. And we're going to try and unpack some of it today, try to give you a little bit of therapy if you're sitting there and you're just beside yourself at another potential Giants season that is going down the tubes. Coming up on the program in segments 2 and 3, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View is going to join me. Had some really good perspectives that are worth sharing, so that's coming up. But before that, I just want to go through my thoughts on the game after having, you know, an opportunity to sleep on it, to reflect, to watch a little bit of the film, and just try to make sense of where this franchise is headed. And I'm going to start off with something that I was debating with myself on the drive home from the stadium last night. I kept saying to myself, what is this team's identity? And I just kept coming back to the fact that this team is still, to me, a mismatched team. What I mean by that is on offense, you have a relatively experienced offense. And, you know, but the way the offense is designed, you just don't see them, I guess, taking advantage of the skill makers that they have. For example, you don't see tight end Evan Engram sent on some of the seam routes down the field to take advantage of when teams crowd the box to stop Saquon Barkley. You don't see Barkley being sent on those wheel routes against the linebackers, which are a mismatch. You see a lot of short passes to receivers who don't necessarily have the breakaway speed, that home run speed that you're looking for. And you're kind of hoping that those guys are going to break free. They're going to separate and make plays. And we just haven't seen enough of that. And look, the roster is what it is at this point. I get it, but something's got to change. You know, the Giants on offense, I think, need to take a few more shots down the field. You can't blame the offensive line here for the protection or lack of protection, as the offensive line is probably right now the least of this team's problems. Whoever thought we'd say that, right? After all these years, but it's a fact. The offensive line is the least of the team's problems. So I just think something needs to give when it comes to that Giants offense. It just, to me, does not seem like it has an identity. It doesn't have a good fit. And it's very frustrating to watch week in and week out that offense just sputter the way it does, given that, you know, again, the presence of Saquon Barkley, given the presence of Evan Engram, and when he's on the field, given the presence of Sterling Shepard. Now, the defense, let's talk about the defense real quick. A lot of people are going to point to the rough game that DeAndre Baker had. And there's no question he had a rough game. I mean, we're not going to deny that. But let's also take a look at a couple of other units that have had rough games. Number one, the safeties. The play of the safeties, to me, has been unremarkable. Yesterday, we saw an incident where Jabril Peppers was unable to get off of a block and make a tackle on Devin Singletary's 14-yard touchdown run. We've seen a couple of instances now where Antoine Bethea has been beaten in coverage. I just don't know, you know, what the answer is there. You know, it is what it is. They're not going to suddenly import new personnel, but after 2 weeks, I don't see that unit having settled down now. So, all right, what can the Giants do then to fix the defensive problems? Well, we at InsideFootball.com, we put out a weekly newsletter after each game in which we break down the strategy, we break down individual player performances. We tell you, we basically get into the X's and O's. So if you really like that stuff, do check us out, InsideFootball.com. The solution we came up with for the defense, which, by the way, doesn't have an identity either. You know, they talk about wanting to be, you know, an aggressive attacking style defense. And we really haven't seen that yet, whether it be because of the personnel or whatnot. But here's the problem we see at Inside Football. The one thing the Giants have had success with has been with blitzing. Okay. So when they blitz the quarterback, they've had a little bit of success. So rather than have this team playing in zone coverage as much as it has, and, you know, the zone coverage could be to kind of, you know, allow for the younger players to get a feel for things. But we would say do a little bit more blitzing and deploy man-to-man coverage. Now, you might get burnt, yes, but at the same time, if you do man-to-man, maybe now you might get, you know, an opportunity for a turnover, something that the Giants defense has not done in that defensive secondary. There has been no interceptions by that team. They've come close a couple times, but haven't been able to put one away. So that's one of the things we would try to do. We would try and, you know, hopefully get some negative yardage, some negative down and distance, just, you know, just take your chances, because what they've been doing just hasn't really worked. And, you know, by sitting back in a zone, what's been happening is the opposing quarterback has been able to pick apart that defense. And that's going to continue to happen until such time that they tighten up the zone coverage, or they start, you know, getting after the quarterback and taking some chances with the pass rush getting home. You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traynor. We're going to take our first break now. When we come back, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View joins the program for segments 2 and 3 as we continue to unpack the Giants' Week 2 loss to the Buffalo Bills, a 28-14 decision, and their third straight 0-2 start to a season. So do stay with us. Can't find a workout that keeps you engaged? Peloton is an immersive cardio experience with real-time features that will always keep you coming back. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use the promo code LOCKED to get started. Hey, Giant fans, if you're looking for tickets to the games or perhaps to the hottest concerts, Broadway plays, or other area events, check out Vivid Seats. Download their easy-to-use app from the Google Play or iTunes App Store. And when you set up your account, you'll be automatically enrolled in Vivid Seats' customer loyalty program, which offers credit back on all purchases made through the app. With Vivid Seats, you'll get great prices and an easy purchasing experience right from your smartphone or tablet, with all confirmed orders backed by a full guarantee. Also, for a limited time, save up to $100 off your first Vivid Seats purchase when you enter the code KICKOFF at checkout. Don't be left on the sideline. Download the Vivid Seats app today and get into the game. And don't forget, use the special code KICKOFF at checkout to save up to $100 off your first Vivid Seats purchase. I'm joined now by Ed Valentine of Big Blue View as we try to continue unpacking what has happened to this Giants team, not just, you know, through the first 2 weeks of the season, but really dating back to last year. I mean, 0-2 start. I think this is what, the third year in a row, the sixth time in the last 7 seasons. Ed, how much uglier can this get?
I don't know, Patty. You know, it's funny. On my way out of MetLife last night, I ran into Paul Schwartz of the New York Post. And Paul said to me, he said, I can't really make up my mind if this feels like it should be week 14 or 15 of this season, or if it's, you know, like week 19 or 20 of last season, because it just, it's the same old, same old. It's the third straight year of 0-2. It seems like every week we see the same issues. We talk about the same kinds of mistakes. It just gets old and it gets tiring. And I don't blame the fan base at this point for being upset.
It does indeed get old and tiring because I feel like I'm writing the same things week after week after week. And Ed, let's talk about some of these things that seem to be an ongoing problem. And let's start with the offense. What did you take away from yesterday's game that maybe is a recurring theme going back to last year as to why this offense just isn't able to get any type of consistency?
Well, Patty, we know that the Giants' offensive line is a little bit better this year than it was last year. I think that's a given. And I think, you know, the Giants kind of hung their hat on the post-Odell era in saying, well, look at all the points we scored the last four games of last year, you know, without Odell. And yes, they did score a decent number of points. There was one shutout mixed in there, but they played pretty well. They showed some things. I just look at this offense and I see, you know, a quarterback in Eli Manning who's 38. He's in his 16th year. He's not in his prime anymore. He is what he is at this point. He can function if everything around him functions, and I don't want to call him a game manager at this, but what he's not going to do is really elevate guys around him. He's not going to make spectacular plays on his own. He's just not going to make his wide receivers better than they really are. And at this point, you're looking at a team that doesn't have dynamic wide receiver. Sterling Shepard missed the game. Golden Tate is suspended. The one speed guy they were counting on, Darius Slayton, has barely practiced, you know, even since the beginning of training camp because of a hamstring issue. They have guys who can catch the ball, but they don't have anybody who really gets open and can make a dynamic play, you know, outside of Evan Engram and Saquon Barkley. And the Bills were absolutely right yesterday. You could see the longer the game went on, the more their defense crept up to the line of scrimmage, the more guys crowded the box. I looked at the stats and Saquon Barkley had 9 carries for 69 yards in the first half and 9 carries for 38 in the second half, because Buffalo just said, if the Giants are going to win this game, Eli Manning's going to have to win it with a diminished receiving core, and that's just not going to happen right now.
No, it's not. And, you know, speaking of the receivers, Ed, one of the things that really, really bothered me yesterday was how we saw plays break down and receivers basically stopped what they were doing and became spectators as Eli was trying to scramble and make something happen. That bothered me, especially coming from a veteran group.
Well, you can talk about Eli and his lack of mobility and things like that, but he did get outside the pocket on a few occasions. He was trying to buy some time, and you have to help him. You can't just stand there and watch the man run around.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not a strength, and yet, you know, the overall game awareness and just – I'm sitting there and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Why are you guys just not trying to get open, try to make something happen, try to help your quarterback, for goodness sake? And it just totally bothered me because, you know, look, I'm not saying Eli is exempt from the problems. He is part of the problem. There's no question about it. But you got to give the man some help there. And they just didn't do it.
You know, when I look back at the game, I looked at it, you know, early Monday morning, you know, pretty quickly, and Eli really missed one throw. He missed a throw on the Giants' second drive to Evan Engram on a intermediate crossing route where Engram was open and Eli threw the ball too high. That would have been a big play that might have, you know, set the Giants up in a situation where they could have gone down and scored points. But for the most part, you know, he's throwing to guys at this point who just can't get open. And I guess the other thing that bothers me through two games, we talk about, you know, last year it was all check down Eli and everybody was complaining about the number of short throws. And the more I watch it, the more I don't see pass routes that are really designed to attack defenses. We don't see Evan Engram down the seam. We don't see, even when they have one-on-ones on the outside, we don't really see any shot plays. We don't see a whole lot that's designed in the intermediate areas of the field. And I think you and I were talking about this yesterday, how a team like New Orleans really attacks that intermediate area. What the Giants tend to do is that they throw the screens and they throw the little horizontal kind of drag routes underneath everything, and they hope for guys to be able to run for stuff. I just watched this passing attack, and you can complain about Eli, but I just don't think this passing offense is designed to really attack defenses.
And that goes back to the play calling, the play selection, the game planning. And that's, you know, Ed, I know I said this on your show. I'll say it again here. I am not a fan of Pat Shurmur calling his own plays. I think it could be done. I think a head coach can do it. But in a case where you're a head coach and you haven't really had the success, I think it's just putting too much on the guy. And we talked about, you know, a quote, you know, you and I were talking about this yesterday in the press box, about a quote that came from Thomas McGahee, the special teams coordinator, from the week before, about, you know, why they didn't try Aldrick Rosas on a field goal. And how, you know, McGahee said, and this is paraphrasing, that, you know, Pat never asked him because he was probably thinking about the next play. Those are the types of things that drive me crazy about a head coach calling his own plays. And at this point, you know, could Mike Shula do any worse?
No, I hear you, Patty. I expected better, you know, from Shurmur in terms of play calling, in terms of offensive design, considering his reputation, considering the number of offenses he's been involved in over the years, the different people he's been exposed to, from Andy Reid to Chip Kelly, you know, all of the guys that he's worked for. I expected a little bit more creativity and a little bit better. I've always been a fan, and I don't know if the Giants could be better or worse with Mike Shula calling the plays, but I've always been a fan of the CEO type head coach who runs the game, you know, leans into the headset and says to the offensive coordinator, let's make sure we run the ball on this series, or let's make sure we throw the ball on this play. Let's get the ball to Saquon on this play, you know, and let's the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator, you know, call the play. I've always been a fan of that type of head coach who oversees the game. So, you know, I don't know what the Giants should do about the play calling situation. I've been a little bit disappointed in the way that this offense has been constructed.
Yeah, I agree, Ed. And we'll see. It's probably going to take a few more games before any kind of change is made, if a change is made. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Ed, one final thought on the offense. And you know, we mentioned it briefly, the offensive line. For the most part, the unit has played solid. But yesterday, a couple of gaps. I know there was the big holding call on Nate Solder. Looked like Mike Remmers missed a block, although I'm not sure if that was his fault or if it was a result of the tight end who kind of, I think, blew the assignment there. But overall, would you say that this offensive line has taken the step forward that it needed to?
I don't really have a problem with the offensive line right now, Patty. I know that, you know, Kevin Zeitler is playing through a shoulder injury that's obviously bothering him. We could see him on the sideline several times yesterday, you know, Trent working on that shoulder, you know, flexing the shoulder. And Mike Remmers, I thought, missed a couple of blocks yesterday. I think one you might be referring to was on a screen pass to Evan Engram. There was another on a swing pass to Saquon that Eli wound up having to throw into the ground, where, you know, Remmers just couldn't get the defender out of the way so that Eli could complete the pass. But overall, for me, there have been some holes in the running game. the pass protection's been pretty good, not perfect, but pretty good. This is better than what we've seen, you know, for the last few years from an offensive line. So it may not be perfect, but on the list of Giants problems right now, for me, it's way, way down the list.
You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina and special guest Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. We're going to take our final break, come back, and wrap it up. So stay with us.
The Locked On Giants podcast is brought to you in part by BlueChew.com. Visit BlueChew.com and enter promo code LOCKEDON to receive your first shipment for only $5 shipping and handling. That's BlueChew.com.
I'm talking with Ed Valentine of Big Blue View, and we're trying to unpack the latest Giants loss and what is starting to become a habit for this team. You know, it just seems like a rinse and repeat cycle. Ed, let's talk defense now. I think we've got to start off with the pass rush. Now, we saw a little bit better. You know, Marcus Golden, I thought, had a more productive game. But he was really the only one, I think, getting any kind of semblance of a pass rush. And that was affecting the back end of the defense. And let's just talk about the correlation there, because a lot of times, you know, and I'm thinking in terms of what Janoris Jenkins said in his post-game tirade, where he said, I can't be expected to cover a guy for 10 seconds. It's a chicken or the egg type of situation. Where do you see the biggest part? Where do you see the biggest problem with the pass rush? Is it up front? Is it on the back end? Or is it both? Is it split equally?
Oh, Patty, I know that the popular analytics driven idea these days is that pass coverage is more important than pass rush. And I just don't, maybe I'm old school, maybe I'm old fashioned, but I just don't buy it, because I mean, the part of Janoris Jenkins' statement that's right is that no matter how good a cornerback is, he can't cover forever. You know, a pass rush has to get home. It has to, you know, it has to make the quarterback uncomfortable, get the guy to move, you know, and force him to throw the ball before he wants to. So for me, I still think the pass rush is most important. I thought Lorenzo Carter was a little bit better yesterday. He was in the backfield a few times, you know, had a few impact plays, but it's still very inconsistent from the Giants, because it's still, you know, a situation where if it's not going to come from Golden, if it's not going to come from Carter, if it's not going to come from X-Man, where's it going to come from? And those guys, they're not going to get home on every single play. So it's difficult for me. But Patty, you know, since we kind of touched on it, I just need to talk about Jack Rabbit's tirade a little bit. I applaud the passion. I really, really do. I applaud the passion. I applaud him saying, you know, I'm tired of being 0-2. I'm trying to win something. We need to play better football. I applaud all of that. What I can't applaud is him, you know, saying things like, I can't cover both sides of the field, which is sort of taking a shot at DeAndre Baker. I can't applaud him, you know, calling out the pass rush, because that's calling out his teammates again, although he didn't name anybody specific. You know, because I looked at the game again this morning and Jack Rabbit didn't play very well. You know, take care of your own house, lead, you know, go ahead and call out your team in general. But for me, you know, don't point fingers at other parts of the team. That bothered me a little bit.
And that's interesting, Ed, because, you know, we saw that when the Giants were struggling a couple of years ago, that's how the locker room started to splinter. So let me ask you this, what type of effect do you think maybe that has on the locker room moving forward? Because, you know, that was the first sign of discontent and you know, upset in that locker room. Do you think potentially that could lead to a splintering?
I don't know, Patty. I know that I think it was Alec Ogletree who was asked about some of Jack Rabbit's comments last night, and Ogletree said, you know, Ogletree didn't know everything that Jack Rabbit said, but he said he's right to be angry because we didn't play well. And he was absolutely right to be angry. But you know what I thought, to be honest with you? I don't know if it'll splinter the locker room or start to splinter the locker room. It was kind of the first thing I wondered about, so I kind of want to watch that. But my first thought was, last year, there were two or three veteran guys that the Giants traded in the middle of the season who maybe weren't 100% happy being there. And my first thought was wondering if that was the Janoris Jenkins' first step out the door toward being moved, you know, sometime before the trade deadline.
That's an interesting thought, Ed. And you know, eventually I think the Giants would like to get Sam Beal into that position down the line. The problem is that Sam Beal is sitting on IR. And, you know, Corey Valentine, you think maybe, okay, maybe he could step in there. But this kid doesn't get snaps on defense, and I don't know why.
You know, I get asked about Valentine quite a bit, Patty, and I'm sure you do as well. We saw Corey make a number of splash plays in training camp. You could see the athleticism. When we saw, you know, kickoff return drills, you can see the speed. You can see the breakaway ability and why the Giants put him back there and are working with him to develop him as a return man. But I get the feeling that the Giants don't see him the same way that maybe the fan base did, that got excited about a couple of plays and a couple of training camp reports, and maybe the same way that we in the media do. I think they see a kid out of a Division II program who's never been anywhere near these kinds of bright lights, like, you know, like there are in Dallas and like there are in any NFL stadium, and also a kid who, with all of the stuff that's still going on with the Dwayne Simmons, you know, shooting, with that tragic occurrence. I mean, he's still going to court and testifying, you know, in the trial there and all of that. That's got a lot on his plate right now and maybe isn't really ready. I mean, I'd like to see the kid get some snaps too, but it's apparent to me that the Giants just see him as a kid who's not ready yet.
That's a very interesting take, Ed, and one that really hasn't been discussed much, especially with the off-field stuff, which, you know, is not the young man's fault, but still, you got to wonder how much of that does cut into the time and you know, what kind of effect that has had on him. So that's a really, really good perspective there. Ed, final thoughts on this team. Where do they go from here after an 0-2 start?
Oh, Patty, I really don't know. I mean, I think that when the season started, when you looked at the schedule, when you realized what the Giants are, I think you would have looked at this first four games and you would have accepted a 2-2 record after four games. Now, the reality of it is you've got a Tampa Bay team that won five games last year that has Jameis Winston at quarterback. Yes, they're 1-1 and they beat the Carolina Panthers, but that's not a juggernaut. That's not a great team. Then you have the Washington Redskins in week four. So theoretically, it's possible that you can still get to 2-2. We just haven't seen a whole lot of signs that's really actually something that's realistic at this point. I think we just have to hope. I mean, I hope Sterling Shepard is back next week to give the Giants a little help in the passing game, because they simply have to make some plays down the field. Offensively, they just have to attack more instead of just taking the 5-yard pass all the time. And I'm just not going to blame Eli for that entirely. Part of it is on him, but I'm not going to blame him entirely, because I just feel like a lot of the offense is designed, you know, for that kind of a throw. I just think we have to wait and see and realize that what this Giants team is, Dave Gettleman hates the word rebuilding, but basically that is what this team is. We have to wait and see over the next 14 games, over the next couple of years, if some of these young players that the Giants have really invested so heavily in, you know, as far as their future is concerned, if they get better from week two to week 15 or 16. And I think that's what you have to look for is progress, not necessarily wins and losses.
I agree, Ed, and really good perspective. I want to thank you for coming on the program with me. As always, it's always a pleasure catching up on the show. Giant fans, don't forget, tomorrow is Twitter Tuesday. You guys know what to do. If you want to get a question in, please get them in to me by 6 o'clock on Monday, because I'm going to be taping the show a little bit earlier. I want to catch the Browns and Jets game tonight and take, you know, just relax and kick back and watch some different fireworks for a change. So thank you for listening, and we will talk to you soon.